We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft. But Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink. Which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Welcome to the Solid Verbal.
The Solid Verbal.
Come after me! I'm a man! I'm 40!
I've heard so many players say, well, I want to be happy. You want to be happy for a day? Eat a steak.
It's that woo woo!
And now, Dan and Ty.
Welcome back to the Solid Verbal, boys and girls. My name is Ty Hildebrandt. Joining me, as always, over there in Chicagoland, still looking for Dr. Richard Kimball, the one and only Dan Rubenstein. Sir, how are you?
I'm pretty good. For the first time since March, I have worn real pants consecutive days. Yeah, I wouldn't have Friday. I guess it's the full weekend. I wouldn't have Friday normally, but it was the Jewish New Year. And so had a little bit of a celebration in a backyard. And then yesterday was a little bit chilly in the morning. So I had pants on and
define now for some. Define real pants for our listening audience.
I'm wearing some charcoal-colored chinos.
Chinos? Like so you dressed
like
up for this
slimmer,
occasion.
Skinnier fit, khaki-type material. Yeah.
All right. Well, I
took a shower. I'm wearing pants. Ty, I am ready to fully dive into an action-packed week. I don't know, X.47? I don't know what the week is. Let's go.
Time is just a construct, Dan. Welcome back. They call it week three. I, too, am wearing pants for this occasion. We hope you are as well, wherever you may be. I am Ty, he's Dan. We are the Solid Verbal. Don't forget to subscribe to our show. We broadcast three times per week. You can also follow us along on social media, on Instagram, on Twitter, and on Facebook. We do have a subreddit.
Solidverbal.reddit.com. YouTube.com/the, as in the Ohio State, the Solid Verbal. I've watched enough YouTube that I know to tell people to smash that subscribe button.
Smash the like button.
And tickle with your more sensitive fingers. Tickle that bell for notifications when we post something new. Tickle it. Tease it.
I have to get used to saying that now.
Yeah, you do.
Smash the like button and the subscribe button.
Yeah.
Sign up for the YouTube. And sign up for the newsletter at solidverbal.com. We've been teasing said newsletter for months on end. Last week, we did send out notification about our new show on the newly formed Solid Verbal Podcast Network called Big Boy Bets, a show that you are doing with our good friend Jeff Schwartz, former NFL offensive lineman. That's going to be dropping every Thursday, correct?
That's what the plan is. It's more college football wagery talk, and it's more talk about Jeff's life experience as a very large and athletic human being and how the world is not built for him. So quite entertaining, not long shows, about 35 minutes, about a half hour to just add to your college football listening week. And very excited to see where it goes. And guess what, Ty? We have even more planned.
That was going to be where I was going with this. Yeah. So sign up for that newsletter. There is more to come.
We've been deep in the lab. More to come. We've sent out two newsletters in 2 weeks, which must be a new record for us. There will be another one going out this week. and all sorts of miscellaneous fun things, recipes, links, news about the show, Ty's long secret relationship past. It's all there. It's all in the newsletter.
All in there.
SolidVerbal.com. Okay, let's move forward with talking football.
Okay, so they call it week three, Dan. It was more like week two for Power Five football. General themes, general takeaways. I have reverbs here at the ready that I'm going to play in a hot minute. But, you know, not a lot of great action, right? We discussed it on the preview. Miami-Louisville was obviously the biggest matchup. But for a lot of teams, it was their second game. And yeah. As you've grown fond of saying over the years here, you really do learn a lot in that span of time between week one and week two.
And totally. For teams specifically, depending on their schedule. I know this is a wonky way to talk about weeks this year.
Right. Of course. I do feel like there are some teams about whom we actually did learn a lot. So I'm excited to dive in there and, of course, talk about the new naming controversy that we have on our hands featuring Malik Cunningham.
Yeah, I did a deep dive. I'm ready.
All right. So any general takeaways for you?
Yeah, I think basically what's going on in this very strange college football year is teams are doing everything they can to avoid waking up at 47 years old. And so that's waking up with a creaky back, waking up with a little bit of a limp, waking up and the vision's a little bit off. And so some teams are succeeding in doing that, and they're taking measures the night before, getting plenty of sleep and drinking plenty of fluids. And some teams, it's all just so new being that age. I'm looking at you, certain areas of the ACC and Big 12, that they're saying, I'm invincible. I'm just going to roll out of bed and take care of business against this decent enough group of five school or this what I consider to be lower level Power Five school. And now that you're 47, it's not the same. It's just not the same. And so seeing the balance of that across the sport early on, and I believe it's actually going to carry on because, you know, rosters are going to be very different in the way that available players are on the field or not. I'm fascinated to see how that carries over, especially into next week as we get more and more Power Five opportunities of football. Yeah.
And we did get a lot of questions. Of course, the Big Ten did announce their schedule, which maybe we'll get into on our little Q&A extra session that we've got planned here that we're going to put up on the YouTubes, as it were. But a lot going on. Mike Norvell got COVID, which sucks for him. He's going to be out. Won't be able to coach that Miami rivalry game next weekend. But weird year. Why don't we dive in with reverbs? We got a good batch of reverbs here. Our boy Ryan cut them up for us, dropped them in the old Dropbox bright and early this morning for all y'all to enjoy. Have a listen.
Hi, this is Peyton from Orlando.
Hey, Longhorn fan from Canada here.
Hey, this is Cole, a Notre Dame fan from Rocky Top Country.
Hey, Dan, Ty, this is Sean in Pensacola.
Dan, Ty, help. I'm watching the Texas State game, and I think they're going to win.
I got a question. Has UCF officially been asserted into the Big Three of Florida college football?
Wondering if Malik Cunningham needs to go by Mikhail Cunningham again to get some of his powers back. Hook 'em.
I just think it's kind of weird that I've got to watch golf to listen to Mike Tirico's lovely voice. Go verbal.
Hey, this is Barry from from Denver. Used to be Kiev, Ukraine. You've lost your Ukrainian audience. Just watched my Thundering Herd dominate App State. Dan, Ty, don't underestimate or disrespect the herd.
Hi, this is Eric from Camarillo. I just got done watching Marshall, a team who was disrespected by a certain unnamed podcast host, take down Appalachian State at home. All I've got to say is this.
Who's got a hurdle? I've got a hurdle. Who's got a hurdle? I've got a hurdle. Rank it, you cowards.
Hey, Dan, Ty. This is Sean in Pensacola. Just watched my Georgia Tech Yellow Jackets turn the ball over six times against UCF. Considering re-enrolling at Georgia Tech to walk on as the kicker. See you next week.
Dan, Ty, this is Squishy in New York. Just watched my beloved Boston College Eagles fly out over the Blue Devils. Jerk squad in full effect. Saw those hashtag halftime adjustments. Time to get in, baby. There we go, 1-0. Let's go.
Hey, this is Matt in California. And just as I expected, B. Eric came out the king. of Louisville.
In the Navy, we come back from 24 down in the Navy.
In the Navy. Nice little ditty there. Thank
Shout out,
you.
Squishy.
Yeah, thank you to one and all for calling our Reverb line at 408-VERBAL-1. Again, for those who are just finding us, we open up our Reverb line, our voicemail line, every weekend. Call in, give us your instant takes on what's going on in and around the world of college football. Nice to see the Thundering Herd bringing some fire to the Reverb line this week after their big
coming
win.
At
over.
Us. A lot of people coming at us.
Coming in hot after the Marshall big win over App State and some Boston College. When was the last time we had a Boston College message on the Reverb line, Dan? I feel like it's been
a bit. It's been a minute.
An eternity. All right.
That's what happens when the ACC is front and center for 2 weeks as the only conference playing Power 5 versus Power 5 football. And by the way, I did notice something about the Reverbs, and I've noticed it the past, I don't know, maybe a couple of years, and I couldn't quite put my finger on it. Isn't it strange that everybody seems to have, I don't know, the same three phones, and that the audio quality from phone calls based on, I guess, network and where you are in your house or whatever is so wildly varied. It'll be like, hey, Dan and Ty, I'm missing the Oregon Ducks here.
Hey, dude, Kansas State football is really gonna do me in.
Yeah.
And I treasure it.
All right. Well, thanks to everybody calling in. We appreciate it. Thanks to our boy Ryan for cutting those up bright and early. Let's get into the Miami-Louisville game.
Louisville. 47. This is a Jose Borregales appreciation show from now on.
That's right.
Yeah.
Miami 47, Louisville 34. First off, Dan, Miami won by 13. Whatever. The more important story here is that Mikhail Cunningham is going back to Malik Cunningham.
That's the more important story. I am dropping 50 again on Louisville. Okay, continue.
I am crestfallen at this development. We have celebrated the McHale namesake since last October. How about a heads up, man? How about cluing us in on this so that we could prepare accordingly? So now, I guess what happened was his real first name was McHale. And he decided in October of last year he wanted to be called by his proper, real first name, McHale.
Surprising his mother, by the way, when she heard the PA
surprising his mother. Yeah. That's right.
Yeah.
He had gone by Malik. Everybody called him Malik, which is apparently his middle name. So he decided he was going to go to McHale, made a decision, much like the Big Ten, it didn't take. It didn't take.
Correct.
And he decided that he was just going to go back to Malik. So now it is Malik. I will be honoring that request. It will be Malik with a question mark heretofore.
Yeah.
He had a good statistical game. Did not get the job done, though.
Yeah.
At the end of the day here. Because obviously the bigger story is Miami and what they did, right? Miami looked really good on offense. De'Eriq King, 325, 3 touchdown passes. Cameron Harris, 9 carries, 134. Brevin Jordan, a big game at tight end. Like, you can go through the stats if you want to, but the truth of the matter is this game was never really close. Louisville did have a hot minute when they pulled closer in the second half, but Miami immediately answered on two separate occasions to finally open up a 2-score lead. And I think put this one at arm's distance. So the one thing that I came away from in going back through this game just to try and collect my thoughts is how in our preview show, we talked about what looked to be a pretty big mismatch. Miami's rushing offense from last week versus Louisville's defense from a year ago. Like, that was all we really had to go on. Some
totally
previous benchmarks. It was clear that any concerns we had about the Louisville defense were very correct. There were a handful of plays in this game where Miami receivers were just wide freaking open, running unabated down the field, no one around them. And to their credit, De'Eriq King hit him in stride. This was an offensive showing from Miami that didn't so much revolve around the ground attack like we had seen in week one, but it was a much more balanced attack that will certainly bode well for them now moving forward in this like new offensive regime. So, look, a really impressive showing. Louisville still got work to do on defense. They're still good on offense, but Miami outclassed them really on both lines. It was incredible.
Truly, yes. And this was not a perfect game for Miami. They took advantage of some collapses from the Louisville defense, those wide open runs, and there was a wheel pass to Jalen Knighton early on in the second half. It was, I think, four consecutive drives with touchdowns. Each team had two touchdowns to open up the second half. So it looked to be pretty exciting. But yeah, Louisville did not get into the end zone early. The offense looked exceedingly conservative outside of the very smart decision to give Javian Hawkins the ball. He looks like he will be
a monster.
Quite exciting a monster. In the ACC. Yeah, and beyond. But yeah, Cameron Harris is fantastic. And he had that long run early in the second half, but between the tackles, he was very good. I'm still a little concerned about Miami's offensive line, but when they were able to generate so many, as you mentioned, explosion plays, both through the air and on the ground, I'm really impressed with Brevin Jordan. It's impossible not to be, one of the best tight ends in the country for Miami. And crazy impressed with the Miami defense and their ability to get after a quarterback who is as good as now Malik Cunningham.
Malik?
McHale. Did you see the reasoning behind his switch back?
I was under the impression that the move to McHale just didn't take, and everyone was still calling him Malik.
Everybody just called him Malik, and I cannot stress enough, as somebody who did change his first name, shortening it, not changing it from middle to first name and back, you got to do it day one, and you got to stick to it. You got to do it day one of college. I went Danny to Dan day one of college, and it stuck because nobody knew better. Nobody knew better. And I know it's very different because he was a known recruit and everything. His name was known, but you got to do it day one. You got to stick with it. So I was disappointed by Malik Cunningham. He had some accuracy issues. He was under fire a ton from this Miami defensive line. His offensive line didn't do him any favors. And Miami just in every phase other than Miami still looked pretty undisciplined, especially pre-snap. A lot of penalties. They need to clean that up if they hope to compete at a higher level in the conference. And, you know, generating a ton of explosion plays against what we imagine to be another probably not great year for the Louisville defense. It should be what upper level ACC teams do to the Louisville defense. And so good for Miami for showing that they can do what upper level ACC teams do. Curious to see how they scheme against better defenses on their schedule. But they checked every box in terms of what an improved Miami offense should look like in terms of balance, in terms of just creativity. So I came away from this game, especially watching the kicking game, because now Miami has a friggin' kicker, the FIU transfer, Jose Boregales.
Boregales.
Nailed a 57-yarder
before
the end of the first half.
Yeah.
Dude has a, like you would say, he's got a friggin' boot.
He does.
He's got a friggin' boot. So encouraged by Miami. I'm not down on Louisville quite yet because their offense is going to keep them in a number of games. But as you mentioned, this was after, I think it was a touchdown lead for Miami somewhat early in the second half. Miami just showed themselves in basically every phase to be they're on a different college football level when they're focused than Louisville can be right now. So really cool to see.
Yeah. And Miami, to your point, right, they've got, I think, a better defense next week against Florida State. I don't know if Florida State, actually, I know Florida State doesn't have the firepower on offense to compete with a team like Miami if they can play at this level. But for sure, it will pose a different challenge for the Canes, that FSU defense.
I saw some defensive issues against Georgia Tech from Florida State, though, so
we'll see.
We'll see. Yep.
And on the Louisville front, too, I think the same is true. They've got another good defense next week against the Pitt Panthers. Now, Pitt won. We were both skeptical about what Pitt was going to do with a 21-point spread.
So many points for a Pitt offense that we've watched these past couple
felt
years.
Felt like a lot with Pat Narduzzi, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it was. Look, it was. 21-10. They beat Syracuse. They got out of there with a win. Kenny Pickett called it sloppy. It was sloppy. Seven penalties, three missed field goals, and two turnovers in this game. They'll always have those baby blue uniforms, though. That really does make up for a lot of sins, doesn't it?
It does, and still kind of funny given what we've seen from Pitt these past couple of years as a decent enough team, but not certainly upper level of the ACC to see that I think they're ranked 25th going into this game.
No.
That little 25 was funny to see in this very different college football world. Yeah, Pitt has a full-on good defense, and that's going to get them pretty far, but offensively, they have interesting talent, but their ceiling looks to be pretty low. Now, Syracuse is a nightmare themselves on offense, and improved also on defense. I actually came away from, and I scrubbed through this game pretty quickly, but Syracuse kept the Pitt offense off balance. It wasn't just sloppiness from Pitt. It was, you know, good defense from the Orange. So I'm encouraged by that from Syracuse in terms of what they can do improving this program. But that offense, that line, the ability to pick up blitzes and to notice things and to get the ball to talent. And I saw they were rotating in the backup quarterback, Culpepper. Was it Rex Culpepper?
Rex Culpepper.
Yeah. And he was the one who completed that longer touchdown pass. I mean, using the word hapless might be appropriate for where this Syracuse offense is, which is crazy considering where they were a couple years ago with grungy Eric Dungy. But it's hapless. Just the horses aren't there. The consistency, the buy-in isn't there. Whatever it is, this looks like a nightmare in the works that I hope they can get turned around.
Yeah, Pitt had 7 sacks in this game and a couple game-changing defensive plays that gave them separation. As I mentioned, Pitt is at home next week against Louisville. And look, it's an important game for both teams. I think it'll pose an interesting challenge for that Louisville offense. We know they're going up against a really good defense here in Pitt. Same deal. I'm not entirely sure Pitt's got the offense to go toe-to-toe with Louisville, but if the defense comes to play, who knows what could happen. We'll see there. Elsewhere in the ACC, I guess the two or presumed top two teams going into this week, Clemson won 49-0 over the Citadel. Trevor Lawrence missed his first pass and then completed 8 in a row, including
I think it was a drop, too.
Yeah. Including 3 for touchdowns. He also ran for a touchdown. Most important thing in a game like this is nobody got hurt. Move on to the next week. Big games, of course, for Trevor Lawrence, Travis Etienne. And on the Notre Dame side of things, it was 35-0 at half in favor of the Irish. Really strong effort on the ground for Notre Dame. 281, 6 rushing touchdowns. 1 apiece for Chris Tyree and Jafar Armstrong, as well as Sebo Flemister, a new name to get used to. Had 3 short ones for Ian Book. For as much as I bemoan the passing game with Book, this was significant that they got a good ground game going. I understand it's only against South Florida, but it will probably mean way more in the grand scheme this year to have a good complementary rushing game. I don't know if they're going to look this good against other teams on the schedule. Probably not, but I took this as a very positive sign. The schedule is very manageable for Notre Dame. It really does come down to November 7th against Clemson at home. And so to see it felt like a step forward on a bunch of different fronts for Notre Dame. They definitely look better offensively. So, I hate to keep saying we'll see, but truly, if this offense can continue this evolution and grow into this rushing attack, that would mean big things.
I'd add November 7th and November 27th at North Carolina, just because what you're able to do or not do against Clemson at this point in Notre Dame's life cycle under Brian Kelly, yes, they should be competitive with Clemson. The concern to me with Notre Dame, not concern, the question to me with Notre Dame is if North Carolina is able to score 28 points and they're able to contain on some level the run with what should be an okay defense. The Ian Book pop factor to me. Can they get to 31 if Ian Book's the one that needs to be responsible for doing it through the air? That's the Clemson game. Clemson's a proven entity. North Carolina on the road. The rest of the schedule, everybody has at least one fatal flaw. Florida State, Louisville, Pitt, Georgia Tech. These are all Notre Dame should be beating these teams by double digits. That to me, that North Carolina game looms larger than ever now, not because of anything that happened against South Florida, but just because that's going to be a fascinating bellwether about this Notre Dame offense.
Yeah, and knowing Notre Dame, I think you're right about UNC, but the measuring stick is the Clemson game.
Totally.
They lose the Clemson game if they're at least not competitive in that Clemson game. The rest of it doesn't matter.
But that wouldn't shock you fully.
It wouldn't shock me. Clemson's a juggernaut.
Totally.
But I think that's just where the fan base is at. They need to see results.
For sure. Yep. Agree.
We agree. Notre Dame wins 52-0. No trouble with that game on Saturday against USF at home. Let's talk about Boston College. We got some calls about BC, Dan.
Let's talk BC.
26-6, big game for the Jerky Boys on two fronts. First off, Phil Jurkovic.
Yeah.
Starting his first game since he transferred over from Notre Dame. And actually, I saw his first game starting since his senior year of high school.
Wow. Okay.
17 of 23, 300 yards, 2 touchdowns. Took him a little bit to get going. They moved him around a bit because the line is
Not so great. Yeah.
But his second half was really solid. A great start for them. The bigger story for BC, like, we're not a BC show per se, but the defense looked really solid. And this is an issue last year.
We're a Jose Borregales show.
We're a Jose Borregales show. Straight. For sure.
Yeah.
Defense was an issue last year. It looked much better in game one here. Jeff Hafley, their new coach, defensive guy, comes over from Ohio State. And, you know, one of those guys in the highly thought of drawer of your coaching reports.
Totally.
I think the showing that we saw here from the defense was admirable. Understand it was against Duke, and, you know, Duke may have some of its own issues to contend with, but the truth is they did bring a lot back to this team. And I thought Chase Brice did pretty well in his opening stanza against Notre Dame a week ago. They forced 2 interceptions. Chase Brice didn't look nearly as good, frankly, against Boston College. And just a really promising start for Jeff Hafley. I feel good for him.
Yeah, they kept it, Boston College did, on offense, pretty conservative, as you mentioned. A lot of rollouts, a lot of short dump-offs for Phil Dracovic to keep him comfortable and get his sort of feet warm. And he hit a couple nice shots downfield, notably to Zay Flowers, who we're talking about an upper-level ACC receiver. So weaponry-wise, Phil Dracovic at least has Zay Flowers. I know they have a couple other guys that are promising at receiver, but they're not going to be leaning on that power rushing game like they did under A.J. Dillon for so long. Curious to see. I came away somewhat impressed by Phil Dracovic, but his stat line, I think, inflates his performance a little bit just because it was a lot of dump-offs and yards after the catch that went into it. But still, Boston College bending some on defense, but not breaking, especially in the red zone. You mentioned forcing those turnovers. A really nice step forward, even though, as we've mentioned before, Duke's offense has been a disaster this last, I guess, 365 days or so. So a really nice opening stanza for Boston College, considering it's their first game, first quarterback, first game for the quarterback, first game for the coordinators with everybody. So you come away with a 20-point win. That's nothing if not something to celebrate. So good for the Eagles.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
All right, two other quick ones here in the ACC. We'll go to UCF and Georgia Tech. UCF wins. It's their first game of the year, 49-21. I like UCF a lot here. I think you were a little concerned about it being their first game, also being down a bunch of guys who opted out.
Yeah.
And it did take them a bit to hit their stride, but once they did, this was over. 660 yards of offense, 417 and 4 touchdowns on the arm of Dylan Gabriel, 10 catches for 154 and 2 scores for Marlon Williams. Look, they're going to have a chance to maul some teams this year.
Yeah,
they are going to have a chance to do that. They've got some biggies on the schedule against Memphis, against Cincinnati, but they bomb everyone on the schedule. If they go undefeated in a goofy season, a little bit of crimp in the works now that the Big Ten and probably the Pac-12 are going to throw their hats in the proverbial playoff ring.
Right.
But just saying, there's going to be some steam on UCF for the playoff in a very odd and quirky year. They've got a win over a Power 5 team. It's Georgia Tech, but it's still a really impressive showing. If they want to have that claim, they need to beat a Power 5 team by 4 touchdowns the way they did. And yeah. Look, the offense is there. The offense is going to be there all year.
Well, yeah, there was a shorthanded Georgia Tech defense, not an excuse, because UCF is going to lay it on pretty much everybody. The thing I might be also concerned about, not in terms of playoff, but just in rankings and standing, is the two games that UCF really needs in terms of, other than Cincinnati, to declare themselves, you know, of top 10, 12 quality. Houston and Memphis, both on the road, are in bad shape in terms of postponements and cancellations. We saw the Baylor-Houston game cancel, and Memphis is canceled, I guess, for the second straight week. They just canceled against UTSA for this coming Friday.
Right.
So that's concerning, both on a human level in Memphis and Houston, but also because UCF needs to build out a resume and really nice opening stands, as you mentioned, against Georgia Tech and winning by 4 touchdowns. Also, this is a footnote, because the story is Dylan Gabriel and the rushing attack and, you know, spreading the ball out to receivers really impressively. I don't know if you watched any of Jahmyr Gibbs for Georgia Tech. I don't know if you saw any. I know you were sort of tied up during this game. Jahmyr Gibbs, true freshman, blue chip running back, came in, made a huge statement in the return game. I think he brought it into the red zone, 75-yard return. And the announcer, I think it was Joe Tess, hammered the point home that when he was being recruited and when Georgia Tech grabbed him, it was a lot of, this kid is Reggie Bush. And he carried the ball 15 times. He was fine on the ground, but he caught passes. He was great in the return game. He is so comfortable with the ball in his hands for a freshman. Just a name to file away. Jahmyr Gibbs, Georgia Tech. Looks like he is going to be one of the more electric ACC all-purpose players in years to come. That's all.
That's interesting. Okay. Yeah. Keep that name. Commit it to
memory. And those types of players are what Georgia Tech sorely needs. So I'm excited for him.
And the final footnote here in the ACC, we saw NC State play its first game. They won 45-42. A lot of points here. NC State basically led for 3.5 quarters. But as we always say on the podcast, you can't let Wake hang around like that. And the Wolfpack needed a late touchdown to regain the lead, to ultimately get the win. Good start for them. It does get much harder over the next 2 weeks at Virginia Tech and at Pitt. But good start after what was kind of a disaster year in 2019 for the Wolfpack.
Yeah, defense still kind of looks like it fell off a cliff. And Wake has sort of a janky RPO offense. But good to see Sam Hartman come back after taking a couple of big hits against Clemson. And good to see Wake run the ball pretty well. But really, the best thing about this game was NC State has lost 3 straight to Wake, including losing by 30-plus, I think like 34, 35 points last year. I think it was 44-10. And to come back and be 35 points better on offense and come away with a W, especially leading the way on the ground. By the way, I don't know if you're a morning person or a night person, but Zonovan Knight and Ricky Person on the ground for NC State. What are we talking about? So good for the Pack. I like it.
All right, let's move over to the Big 12 here. There is actually a fairly big story. Perhaps we should have bubbled it up sooner. I apologize to any Oklahoma State fans screaming at their phone or podcast player of choice, but Oklahoma State,
I don't think they want to celebrate what happened.
Well, nobody
yesterday.
Wants to celebrate, but
okay.
It is a pretty significant story, not just in the Big 12, but I think nationally. Oklahoma State brings a ton back from last year's team. There's a lot of steam on the Pokes going into this season. They did win only 16-7 over Tulsa. The big story is that Spencer Sanders, their quarterback, got hurt on the very first offensive drive, limped off with a right ankle injury. Mike Gundy said it did not appear to be serious, but obviously we do not know his status quite yet for the coming weeks. Without him, this offense was kind of twisting in the wind. The line really struggled. Neither of the backups had played a snap for Oklahoma State. The first guy, Ethan Bullock, had a rough go of it. The next backup was actually a true freshman named Shane Illingworth.
Yeah.
Provided a nice spark in the second half. Went 4 of 5 passing. I don't know if it's safe to assume that he would get the gig if Sanders is out for any prolonged period of time, but definitely gave the Pokes a little bit more balance out there. Chuba Hubbard got work, but it was obvious Tulsa was keying on him, so he wasn't able to really break the game open. Tylan Wallace didn't have a catch in the first half. So, questions about that offense. The offense was expected to be a three-headed monster of Sanders, of Hubbard, and Tylan Wallace. Without Sanders, again, so much of that offense was going to hinge on how well he played this season. It's definitely an open question here. The good news is that they're still really good on defense, and the defense did come through in a really big way here. Tulsa was 0 of 11 on third downs, held again to just one touchdown, and that was really necessary in this football game to give the Pokes a chance to win. We'll have to see what the deal is with Sanders moving forward, but a bit of a scare here, I think, is putting it mildly for the Pokes in week one.
I saw some scuttle, like our friend Ted Miller likes to say. I saw some scuttle that Spencer Sanders wanted to come back at some point. So certainly, maybe it's just the competitive nature and maybe just the energy he had. But it doesn't sound like it's crazy serious. And Tulsa would be a good game to let your quarterback, your starting quarterback, heal up. And it was nice to see Shane Illingworth. But if Oklahoma State has to count on a third string true freshman quarterback, even if he's good, I think you got to pencil in 2.5 stinkers. I think that might be my standard promising true freshman quarterback stinker line. Shane stinkers, I guess, like we had for Sam stinkers in Texas. Chuba Hubbard can only do so much behind that line. The quarterbacks can only do so much in terms of buying themselves time behind that line. That's a concern to me about Oklahoma State moving forward. But when you're clunkers, they were down 7-3 at halftime. They got that spark from the freshman and move forward and hope Spencer Sanders is all right.
Yeah. I think that's right. Okay.
Yeah, that's all I have.
Some other games here I'll run through very quickly, Dan. We had Louisiana winning an OT, kind of a letdown spot for them after beating Iowa State on the road a week ago. 34-31, they survive in overtime over Georgia State. We did get calls about Marshall.
Really impressive day for Marshall.
Yeah, 17-7 over App State. What happened here?
App State kind of hit a wall on offense. A lot of errors, a lot of Marshall's defense coming through in opportune moments, but I was surprised by this. I thought App State was going to take a nice step forward in week two for them, and Zach Thomas seemed like himself at times and then fully off at times. The big thing was they weren't able to consistently generate big plays on the ground against this Marshall defense, and that's where App State these past couple seasons has really made their hay. And Marshall just... Grant Wells, he wasn't great at quarterback. They made some mistakes, but to be led by that defense and hold, I think App State only scored in that first quarter. So really impressive day for Marshall's defense. If you remember, I don't know, 2 or 3 years ago, they had a really exciting defense as well. So, hey, happy for the Thundering Herd. 2-0, move forward. Beating a ranked App State team, even in a strange year where rankings have to be interpreted differently, hell yes.
Yeah.
That's it.
Cincinnati got off the schneid. They win 55-20 over Austin Peay. Austin Peay's played like everybody so far this season. Tough go of it for Austin Peay. But they lose by 35 to Cincinnati. Our double-barreled lock of the week was down 24 points.
Close call, Ty.
At half, 27 unanswered in the second half to win on a 33-yard field goal. The U.S. Navy, 27-24 over the Tulane Green Wave. You know, I was really proud. I had a bad pun, bad pun on Twitter.
And you love your puns. And you're opening it up, calling it bad. Yeah.
This was especially bad. Saying on Twitter that I expected the Navy to fare better against a Green Wave.
Unbelievable. That's okay. I'm okay with it.
People were kind about it.
Good.
I did expect them to fare a lot better than they did. They woke up. I'm looking at the box score. I'm thinking, holy cow, after the BYU game and the first half against Tulane, this is not a promising start for the midshipmen, but pulled it together in the second half. Again, 27 unanswered to win on that last second field goal. So good on them.
They came out, especially the Navy defense, which has taken so many hits the past 6 quarters, the first half of the Tulane game and then last week or a couple weeks ago against BYU. to come out with their hair on fire in the second half. It was, I think, the first four or five drives for Tulane, and Tulane is not offensively where they need to be. They just are not going to be able to make a lot of plays through the air this year, it looks like, at least with their current quarterback situation. I think it was like four or five straight three and outs and a safety, and like they just, the offense completely was shut down by Navy, which was a nice, refreshing change from the midshipmen. So 1-1, happy to see Navy come back with some fight after, again, six pretty brutal quarters.
Yeah. All right. Not betting on them again. Moving on.
Yeah.
SMU 65, North Texas 35. Shaggy Shane Bichel, 344, four touchdowns. We'd expect nothing less from him. Also, welcome to the show, Ulysses Bentley IV. Freshman running back for SMU, great name, 19 carries, 227 and three touchdowns on the ground in a rout for the Mustangs.
Yeah, great balance. I kind of expected something like this against the North Texas defense, but SMU doing what they should be doing, and nice to see them in a rhythm in an American conference. I know this was non-conference, but in an American conference that has a lot up in the air right now in terms of who is and is not playing, so nice consistency from SMU. Feels familiar, Ty.
Let me rattle off the remaining games in FBS here. We had Liberty over Western Kentucky. We had Louisiana Tech 31-30 over Southern Miss. Troy takes it to Middle Tennessee. UTSA knocks off Stephen F. Austin 24-10. Texas State beats ULM.
I like their quarterback, by the way. The Texas State quarterback. It's Jake Spavadal. He's the head coach. But the Texas State quarterback, it's Vitt, I think. I thought I heard Vic. This was a nice quarterback game, but it Vitt throws a nice ball. That's all.
UTEP 17-13 over Abilene Christian, and Coastal Carolina wins 43-21 over Campbell, Dan. And that's it.
Yeah, the Campbell Camels. New to football. Did you want to review Colonial League football? Did you have any more takeaways? Do you have strong takeaways from Colonial League football?
We've made the decision. I've made the executive decision.
To alienate the vast number of listeners, as many listeners as possible, yeah.
Yeah, we will be playing the Patriot League drum and fife to celebrate local Colonial League football here in Eastern Pennsylvania. High school football, I should add.
Yeah. Okay.
And we'll be doing that this coming week. So I will be formulating my thoughts here, reading the morning call, trying to get a sense for who's good and who isn't. But desperate times, the drum and fife will not be contained. It will not be held down by some stupid virus.
That's true. It should be pointed out as we begin to wrap this show up. These are the games we get to talk about next Sunday and this coming midweek.
Hold on. Yeah. This is me.
I'm ready. Hold on. Okay.
I don't know if you heard that. That was a good old knuckle crack.
Okay.
I'm ready for this.
Loosening up my neck. My shoulders are good. My jaw is in a nice place. Kansas State, Oklahoma, which whatever, but Spencer Rattler against Power 5 competition. Florida traveling to Ole Miss, the debut of Lane Kiffin and Ole Miss. And we get to see Kyle Trask run a pretty impressive offense once again. Notre Dame, Wake, whatever, but it's an ACC matchup. Kentucky, Auburn.
That should be fun.
See year one of Chad Morris and how he can potentially improve an Auburn offense that was pretty down last year, given the circumstances. Louisville, Pitt. So we get Malik Cunningham.
Malik?
Against a really strong Pitt defense is what it looks like anyway. Georgia Southern Louisiana is, I mean, at least a nice enough matchup between undefeated teams. I'm just going through all of FBS here. Iowa State TCU, a weird history, but TCU, after getting the SMU game canceled, gets to play football. LSU, Mississippi State, and Mike Leach's debut, and presumably Miles Brennan's debut. Miles Brennan's, yes, that's English for LSU. Texas Tech. Texas should put on a lot of yards and points on the Texas Tech defense. Oklahoma State, West Virginia. Fascinating to see what happens with Spencer Sanders' health and what West Virginia can do. By the way, I left off a defensive tackle that I meant to mention on our A Star is Born UFO show. Darius Stills for West Virginia. Absolute pleasure to watch in the middle of a defensive line. Absolute
you sound
pleasure.
So old saying that. And just Thank an you. Absolute pleasure.
Army Cincinnati will be good to see Army after a postponement cancellation last week once again and playing against a really good Cincinnati team. What can the Bearcats do against Army's difficult to deal with offense? Georgia, Arkansas, debut of Felipe Franks, Sam Pittman. I don't think it's going to be pretty, but it's a SEC game. Alabama, Mizzou, not fascinating, but SEC game. Vandy, Texas A&M. Tennessee, South Carolina has some ringing in your ears.
Yeah, I'm considering an early lock of Tennessee over South Carolina.
And it's almost too tasty, though, Ty. Doesn't that concern you?
It doesn't, because so far the games that have seemed tasty have been rightfully tasty.
I don't know. It seems
our analysis of week two or three or whatever this past week was, was actually pretty spot on. I feel very good about it. So things could change.
I know.
But I would say in week one, just don't overthink it and go with the better team. I'm looking at another line here, Alabama against Missouri. 28 points is the line.
Yeah.
Missouri may be a disaster on offense this year.
Okay, so not to start previewing. This is previewing our preview. I think Nick Saban and some of the better coaches playing early on and perhaps in a runaway situation, I think they're going to be very conservative about who stays on the field, given everything that's happening on Earth right now, that they don't have to stay on for any longer, though certainly it helps to get those reps in. The Tennessee-South Carolina game, that, what is it, a 3.5-point line? Tennessee's favorite on the road?
Yeah, depends where you look. I see it at 2.5 right now. I see it, I'm looking on ESPN. It's listed at 3.5, yeah.
Yeah. Do you remember the Seinfeld episode that the frozen yogurt was too good to be fat-free?
Too good to be fat-free.
It turned out it was not fat-free.
Yeah.
They took it to the lab, and in practice, it was not fat-free. That's what that 3.5-point line sings to me.
Not
fat-free. Fat-free frozen yogurt.
Tennessee in week one has not really been the best proposition over the last couple of years.
Not a great gambling destination.
No, not a great thing. I mean, we kind of get back to our initial formula here with regard to games in, I guess, conferences playing for the first time. That week one game coming off of the weird pandemic haze, generally take the points, but I think we're dealing with some better caliber teams here than we have it in some of the contests that we've handicapped before. So, look, I haven't had a chance to really dive in on a lot of these games here. The one that jumped out at me, though, was Tennessee and South Carolina, just because I think South Carolina might be a bit of a nightmare. I'm intrigued by that Alabama-Mizzou game, but 28 is a lot, given mm-hmm. circumstances. I have not seen a line yet on Oklahoma-Kansas State, but that strikes me as a game that could be a pick of Oklahoma, just given how good they looked. So,
really hoping we get to see Virginia Tech after their cancellations, postponements, really hoping we get to see Baylor after their own situations with not playing football. So they have Kansas and Virginia Tech hosts NC State. So we hope this is a lesser week. I think the final tally was 6 games that couldn't be played this past weekend. We hope that number dramatically comes down.
All right, Dan. Well, thank you, as always, to everyone out there who called in, who wrote in, who listens to the show. Please do subscribe. Please do tell your friends if you want to spread the word about the Verbal.
And if you have friends, use them to spread the word about Solid Verbal, for sure.
5-star reviews are not required, but very much appreciated. Do follow along on our social media channels, Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, the YouTube, the Solid Verbal is username. You know the drill. Yep. Smash the like and subscribe button and tickle that little bell. You want to be
This is where we use our weird suggestive verbs and adjectives about what to do to that YouTube subscribe and notifications button. Maybe this is where you come to shine, Ty.
Yeah, the new outlet.
Yeah, tease and tickle that YouTube subscribe and notifications bell.
Don't forget to do that.
yeah, I'm tapped out. That's
don't
all
forget
I
to but do
we're,
that.
We're about to record video, and so they should. Everybody listening should go to the YouTube channel and our social channels because we're going to record our Sunday brew and a, because as it turns out, you can brew coffee and tea as well as you can brew beer. So we have our more happy hour centric brew and a later on in the week. And then we have our Sunday morning coffee, tea, whatever, brewing a. We're going to answer four or five questions that will be up in pristine, full, high definition.
That's right.
Wherever you watch YouTube and or social media video.
And we're not wearing matching shirts today, correct?
Oh, confirmed.
Confirmed. I saw somebody left a comment on our last video that just killed me about us needing to get a common uniform, like maybe mechanic shirts or bowling outfits.
I mean, a lot of people have called us the college football podcasting version of, what was the Swedish band? The Hives?
Yeah, right.
Are we the Hives?
We could be. We could be.
Yeah.
There's some golf guys on YouTube that I follow who always dress alike. I've never quite understood that. In their case, it seems to be intentional, which is a little weird to
me. The Hives are intentional too. We got to get some solid verbal branded bolo ties or whatever the hell the Hives wear. I'm ready for it. If that's where we want to go, we have to commit like Marty Smith to the bit.
Got to commit to the bit. All right. Thank you so much for downloading, for listening, for subscribing. Please hit the newsletter. We'll be sending that out a little later on this week. If nothing else, please do stay tuned through the early part of this week. Wink, wink, nudge, nudge.
Yeah, we've got some news.
For that guy over there, my good friend, Dan Rubenstein, for myself, Ty Hildebrandt, thanks again so much for downloading, listening, playing along with us. We'll catch you all in a few days. In the meantime, stay solid.
Peace.